Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Last time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
This isn't hot Waxana hot tub, right?
Oh, no. Is it? I don't want to tip my hand at him, but I just really don't want to have had an opportunity to veto that and not.
Well, it's up to you whether or not you want to take that risk, I guess.
I gotta do it. I gotta veto.
Oh, God, really? As Denzel says in Crimson Tide, you're blind and deaf. And you want to shoot your missiles right now? I am positive that Lipizzaner stallions were born black. Ben, and I'm stopping you from the veto.
No! Adam, this was a good war.
The Denzel side is always the right side. See, what I've done is you've handed me your fucking whistle, and I've put it on around my neck. I'm the captain now. You know what's funny is it's not even going to be the episode, I bet.
And now, the conclusion.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. A Star Trek... Oh, Jesus. Oh, give me a second.
What happened?
You know how like once a year you do a fart and it's like a homeless guy came into your house and farted? That is disgusting. I'm so sorry. Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Benjamin R. Harrison.
I am one of your other hosts, Adam Pranica. I hope we keep that opening, Ben.
Oh, yeah.
Unedit that opening.
Oh, God.
What did you do? What did you eat?
I made some carnitas a couple days ago, and it's like one of those dishes where you make a whole lot of it and then you kind of work it into lunches and leftovers, dinners.
Yeah.
Throughout the next 7 or so days.
But yeah, mix them into your eggs.
Meaning I have a lot of rice and beans in my diet at the moment.
Ooh, well, lucky you. Lucky wife.
Yeah, that's a...
You know what they say when you get married, Ben? It's a gassy wife, happy life, right?
Yeah. Yeah, gas-head wife. One of the many things that frustrates my wife about her lifestyle. Adam, would you like to open some Star Trek cards with me? I've been just thinking about the fact that I have 2 out of my 3 signed cards, and it's burning me up inside.
Yeah, I can do that, but I should tell you, I'm recording from the podcast equivalent of the Battle Bridge.
Studio B.
Yeah, I'm in Studio B right now, so I don't have my cards on me. You might have to solo this one.
Okay, solo mission.
The game is 5 cards stud. The game is exceedingly simple. Part of this is just the cards, data.
Time to pluck a pigeon.
What happened? You separated the saucer section?
I did. The studio basement that I typically record out of has had some remodeling done.
Some sound compromising remodels.
Yeah, it's weird, right? When you remove the carpet and replace with wood, your audio fidelity goes to shit. It sounds like anybody canyon down there. And until we get that fixed, I'm going to be recording in the Battle Bridge.
You're going to have to get some baffles.
I know.
Well, I have a couple of cards here. I've got The Bonding, which is a Worf candle episode. I've got
Worf's Elton John episode.
Yeah. The picture is not un-Elton John-like. It's a silhouette of Worf with a candle in the foreground. I've got Birthright Part 2, which is also a Worf episode. I've got Redemption Part 2. A lot of Part 2s in this pack.
Huh.
I've got Pen Pals.
Part 2?
That episode where Data was having a Chris Hansen relationship online.
That was a fun one.
And Unification Part 1. Oh, broke the streak.
What a weird pack of cards.
Yeah, that is a weird one.
The Nikki Cox episode.
Yeah.
Was Pen Pals. Weird.
Oh, yeah, that was Nikki Cox. Yeah, with the crazy long...
with the glitter fro.
Glitter fro and the crazy long pinky finger, right?
Right. Yeah, she had coke pinky finger and glitter fro.
Yeah. Not a great look.
No. No, but Data was down.
Well, that gets me down to, I think I have four. Yeah, I have four packs left.
And one guaranteed autograph in there, right?
One guaranteed autograph. See, this is starting to make me wonder if this, like, fake autograph card that's, like, signed by Juan Ortiz in embossed gold is going to be passed off as one of the autograph cards.
That can't count.
I don't think it should.
Look, I think I really like Juan Ortiz. He's the greatest. he's one of our preeminent Star Trek artists.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the same weight as a real autograph from a Sterling Mazer Jr.
That's no Joanna Miles.
No, of course not. And don't try to pass it off like it is.
Adam, I want to propose something kind of radical here. What if I just open the rest of these right now?
I think you should do it. I think you should... I think that's one of the seven deadly sins from the movie Seven, right?
Yeah.
They find that guy, like, in bed, surrounded by a pile of Star Trek cards and wrappers.
Mm. Oh, yeah, they think he's dead, and then they put their ear to him. And
yeah.
And then there's that other guy that they made have sex with a prostitute with Star Trek cards.
Right, yeah.
That's
I don't know
really
which
upsetting.
One of those sins is you right now. I guess we'll let the cards decide.
Let's see. I've got Man of the People. I don't, some of these are new on me. I've got The Host, which is... I think that's the Bodice Ripper episode with... Oh, no, this is the one with Odan and the ankylosaur in the belly.
Yeah.
I've got Tapestry... Got First Contact, one of my favorites, with What's-Her-Face as the loafed-out nurse that helps Riker escape through sex.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the only way out is in.
And I've got Rascals. Oh, this is a fun one. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
Rascals is not a fun one. As one of our Twitter viewers mentioned to me earlier in the week, I hate children, I guess. I hate them all. Not really
oh,
fair.
Do you? I've hung out with you enough, Adam, to know that that's not true.
I have a problematic relationship with child actors on this show, specifically.
Yeah, that's fine. All right, I've got...
We're into pack two now.
I've got Masks, got Evolution. Oh, here's an interesting... I've got a silver... embossed card that says Ships of the Line, and it shows the Enterprise flying between those crazy tentacle aliens from episode one.
Oh.
Remember those guys turned a bunch of tentacle aliens into a starbase or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah,
now, on the
fun.
Back of this card is a kind of random-looking cutout of, like, a planet and a tiny bit of maybe like the deflector dish of the ship, and it makes me think that maybe this is meant to be one of many cards that you assemble to make a big picture.
Oh.
But little unclear, because I think this is the first one of its kind that I've seen.
A little puzzle piece.
Yeah, a little puzzle piece. Lastly, I've got A Matter of Time, which we just watched.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got Schisms.
Schisms.
And,
Ben, that's the episode that I like the least. Because it, it underscores my...
Shibboleth dish. It's like the word lisp. Very cruel to people who have it. Okay, two more cards. And then we're out of this terrible, terrible bit.
It makes me think of my childhood where I wore a retainer. All the other children made fun of me. And so I killed them. Every student at my school, everywhere.
Going to a Dowd elementary school sounds pretty rough, Kevin.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, they're giving you a lot worse than a wedgie at Dowd Junior High.
Well, you can tell by the fact that the music has changed that I'm back to opening cards. The next five are Survivors, Final Mission, Lonely Among Us, The Perfect Mate. Oh, that's the one with Famke Janssen.
Hmm. Hmm.
And Haven. There's not a signature card yet, Adam. I'm getting worried. I only have one pack left.
This has got to be it, right?
All right. Well, there's quite a bit of suspense involved here.
Are you feeling full yet?
It's a rush. I'll admit that. It's like lining up shots and doing them, you know?
Keep eating, big man.
All right. Last pack. I've got The Battle. I've got In Theory. I've got a signature card here, Adam.
Yes.
This is Deirdre L. Immershine. Who, of course, you will remember as Joval from the episode Captain's Holiday. I think she's the one that got irritated that he was displaying the Horrigan without wanting to bone down.
What? Yeah. All right, I'm looking up the card.
This is a nice-looking lady.
Oh, yeah.
A real coif that really places her in an era, hair-wise.
She's real pretty. And I do remember her just being upset and sort of confused that Picard had displayed the Horrigan without really understanding the consequences of such a display.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Horrigan, Adam, I don't know if I had this card before, but I also in this pack is the card for Captain's Holiday, and it is a picture of the Horrigan.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's appropriate that they would be together. Deirdre and the Horrigan.
Yeah. And then my last one is Timescape, which is...
That's the Jean-Claude Van Damme episode.
It's a pretty groovy picture of a smiley face cloud.
Fun.
Remember that, where they like go aboard the Enterprise and it's like frozen in time and Picard draws a smiley face in a cloud?
That was a nice moment.
Oh, Adam, I am spent.
You too tired to do some pod?
No way. Never.
Like working after a giant meal? You gotta somehow get through.
The only way I can do it, Adam, is with the help of some podcast fluid.
Oh, yeah.
Podcast fluid is best consumed out of the official Greatest Gen Drunk Shimoda's Bar and Grill pint glass, now available at maxfunstores.com.
That's right. If you have an extra $30 lying around, and you'd like to buy one pint glass, you'll love our Drunk Shimoda's pint glass.
It's a collectible. This is not going to be out forever.
I know. I was just making light of one of the comments about what I believe to be our greatest merch item yet.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I'm super pumped about it. I ordered one, Ben. I actually bought our own merch.
I haven't yet, but I plan on it.
I was anticipating a sellout, so I wanted to get in early, get that first edition.
Get in, yeah. You don't want to. You don't want to get a second edition. That would look terrible.
You don't want to get the new edition. Ben, we've gone on quite a run of lengthy Marin Opens.
Yeah.
And hour-long plus episodes. Why don't you say we tighten this up a little bit and get into it? It's coming up right here is Season 5, Episode 10, New Ground.
Adam, I owe you an apology.
Oh, no. Were you not recording?
I'm recording. I'm saying this is an episode that I attempted to veto out of fear that this was the episode in which Lwaxana Troi takes Worf's son Alexander to the mud baths. And what I should have realized is that Troi episodes always have a terrible pun in the name.
Yeah.
And I feel like a fool. I knew that.
You wasted a veto. That's what you did.
Boy. I mean, I don't feel like it was entirely a waste, but I acted irrationally, and I just want to cop to that.
I would say half of our viewership is going to be happy about this circumstance, and the other half is going to be profoundly angry.
Yeah. Well, we get accused of a lot of shenanigans with the vetoes. Sick of being accused of shenanigans.
Yeah. I'll cop to shenanigans where that's the truth. So far, no shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
This was just me legitimately being kind of an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty legit.
The episode starts with Geordi just pumped. He is so fucking excited.
Data. Data, isn't this exciting? We are going to witness a moment in history.
Every nanosecond in this continuum is a moment in history once it has elapsed.
They are working with some aliens on a new type of warp propulsion called Celaeton waves, which Geordi likens to breaking the sound barrier or the warp barrier. And he's like prancing around engineering, just like he is a kid that knows he's about to go to the candy store. And Data and Worf are there helping him out, and they just like cannot bring themselves to feign enthusiasm, which I thought was pretty fun.
This is so typical of Geordi to like just not really be able to read his audience.
Yeah.
I think this is in keeping with his character.
Yeah, and also in keeping with Data and Worf's character that they're not going to do anything to help somebody out. You know, they're like...
Yeah, that's true.
If you're at a dinner party with four people and like you're trying to like keep the conversation going, but it's just not working out, like... Data and Worf are two people you don't want at that table, you know? You're going to look at them with some desperation, and they're going to look away from you, look down at their food, you know?
Yeah, they're like going to the kitchen for seconds. They're not going to get you off the hook.
Nope. They're going to take an important work call that they forgot they had.
Yeah, and speaking of important work calls, Worf gets one of these.
Yeah. And it's his mom. She is like headed to the Enterprise... unannounced, and this is like I was a little surprised that Worf didn't react badly to this.
Yeah,
usually he's kind of annoyed by his parents and acts like they are kind of a burden, but she announces that she and his son Alexander are on their way to the Enterprise, and he's like, okay, I'll set up I'll get a stateroom ready for you, you know, like he is not acting put upon, which is a big shift. I feel like Worf has grown a lot since last his parents visited.
It seems extremely risky for Worf's parents to do this, because as we know from the show Bible, like the number one thing that happens on this show is the Enterprise going on a mission and then getting diverted to a different mission. So if this cargo ship thinks it's going to meet the Enterprise, like there's a 90% chance that it's not going to be there.
Yeah, and yet, she makes it aboard. Like, I feel like the next scene is her and Alexander beaming on board, and it is fairly quickly that she explains to Worf that she's here essentially to drop Alexander off.
How long can you stay? I'm not going back.
Does Alexander look different to you this time around?
Well, it's the same actor, so maybe he's just like grown.
I don't remember his hair looking so much like the triangle haircut lady from the Dilbert cartoons. Like, it is. It's. I mean, Worf has a bob. Alexander has a bob, but Alexander's bob is very severe. It is. It's really triangular.
It's triangular in a way that only a men's rights advocate like. Like Scott Adams could inflict upon a female character.
God, you know, at that age, you just get a lot of bad haircuts. I know. I had many terrible haircuts at that age, but I mean, in a perfect future, it looks like that's still a thing.
I wonder about bad haircuts on little kids, though, because like, I look at my like childhood yearbooks and pictures of me as a kid, and I'm like, why did my parents allow this? This is terrible. Like, they were the ones taking me to the supercuts.
Yeah.
They were paying for it. Why was a bowl cut ever on the menu?
God, it's so true. Like, what a waste of money all of those supercuts haircuts were.
I have talked extensively about the embarrassing West Hot American Summer incident in my past. And that was an embarrassing incident of my own making. I look back at my hair in the 80s and 90s, and I'm exquisitely embarrassed. And it wasn't my fault.
I think there is a adolescent and pre-adolescent haircut industrial complex at work here. I think parents are complicit in this.
Mm.
I think it's wrong.
Yeah, I think that haircut choices should be taken out of the hands of people who think that their children are cute.
If you don't think that the stakes are high in junior high school for looking dumb, think again.
Yeah.
Everything is on the line with that haircut.
Yeah. I mean, that's like 3 solid years of being either a laughing stock or not.
Yeah. Yeah, so Alexander, based on haircut alone, odds are not going to be the cool kid in his classroom. I mean, no, I'm gonna put my chips on that bet.
Yeah, and you have to imagine that the kids of the 24th century are advanced enough not to make fun of somebody for loaf,
right?
But haircut is going to be fair game.
Yeah,
even in the future.
Yeah.
Fun and games get started pretty quickly, and the Soliton thing that we talked about earlier is quickly revealed to be the B/C storyline, and Worf having to adjust to life with his kid on board is the A storyline. So there's a lot of Worf dropping the kid off at school, revealing he doesn't know Alexander's birthday by heart when the teacher is like asking for personal information. Really kind of paints Worf as kind of a deadbeat absentee father.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Which does. Is not, it's not a good look.
It's not really how it was set up, you know? Like he made a rational choice to send Alexander to live with his parents when Kalar bought the farm because, you know, it's a starship, and while there are hundreds of children aboard, it's a pretty dangerous place, and he's not... You know, he doesn't have the ability to provide a fully functioning household. You know, he's a bachelor, and so he sent the kid off to live with his folks, who are, you know, seasoned adoptive parents, but they're like getting too old for it. They're kind of like, his mom kind of drops that Danny Glover line on him. And so he's got to accept Alexander. But then all of this stuff that happens surrounding Alexander moving to the Enterprise reveals that Worf has not even been a good father in absentia. You know, he hasn't kept in touch.
Yeah, and it really serves to confirm Alexander's suspicions from jump and throughout the episode that, like, he feels like no one gives a shit about him.
Yeah.
And he's not wrong.
No. Yeah, I would say that the main arc of this episode is about Worf finding a way to give a shit about his child, which is a really dark subject matter, and it's a fairly light episode despite that.
The show has done so much to build up, you know, the goodwill for its main characters. It's sort of hard to see Worf portrayed this way. Like, there's no middle about it. Like, he's a bad dad.
Yeah, and I think that there is some, like, some covert racism in that. I think that in the 80s and 90s, like, men, and especially black men, being bad fathers was not, like, a problem on television. You know? Like, it's, you know, still a problem in our society. Like, there's less pressure on men to be parents than there is on women. And like, Worf definitely didn't plan on having this child, but he also took, like, zero responsibility for the child when he found out he had it.
It's weird that they saddle this character with that conflict instead of, say, Commander Riker, who feels more likely to have spawned children throughout the galaxy, you know?
Right, and also more likely to have daddy issues.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, not wanting to perpetuate fatherhood because it's an institution he's inherently suspicious of.
Right.
Worf has great parents.
It's true. He really does. Yeah, so why is he so shitty at it?
It's really, like, I mean, I think that they do a little bit to, like, unpack, you know, the kind of identity he had to erect for himself as a stranger in a strange land who had everything taken away from him. But I don't think it quite adds up.
Right. So as we move through the story, it turns out Alexander is every bit the problem child as the titular problem child is from the John Ritter movies of the early 90s.
You know, that kid wasn't adopted. I'd swear he was your real son.
He's stealing shit. He's lying about it.
Yeah.
He's a little bit, he's like that type of kid that's a bully, but also is a chicken shit. Like,
yeah.
Like, he's hitting people and then saying other people started it. He's like that kid.
Yeah.
It's not good. And this is not the way of the warrior.
No. Yeah. This stuff is, like, viscerally offensive to Worf.
Yeah.
Who lives a life that is founded on his personal honor and the honor of his family. So, like, his first tack at, like, trying to address some of these issues with Alexander is basically telling Alexander, like, If you do dishonorable shit, it reflects badly on me, and I can't have that.
But I've remedied the situation.
Like reasoning with a child of this age is just hilarious to watch. Because yeah. The child is going to do anything he can to just end the conversation. Especially by just agreeing with whatever's being said. Like, oh yeah, I get it.
Oh, it's all you need to know about torture.
Yeah.
Because having a conversation about how you behave with a child of this age is a form of torture for
yeah.
that child. And like a victim of torture, the child is going to tell you what you want to hear, not necessarily the truth.
Yeah. I love the story that he tells him about the statue on his coffee table.
Yeah.
He's got the statue of two brothers on his coffee table, and they're like clenched in a fight. And yeah. Worf tells this story.
It's a very homoerotic statue.
They fought for 12 days and 12 nights because Moroth had broken his word and brought shame to his family.
Because one of them dishonored their family and the other one wasn't into it. Like, and that's the lesson that Alexander is supposed to learn. And
yeah.
that's the lesson that Alexander says that he has learned just to stop the conversation.
Yeah, Worf has abstracted the idea of honor far too much for a child of this age, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not working well. Well, anyways, back to the B/C storyline. They beam on the scientist who is going to be conducting this big experiment with soliton waves. And they have a little McLaughlin group where he kind of explains the experiment to them. This guy's got, like, Edward James Olmos-level acne scars.
So say we all.
He's got mouth loaf. I think this might be the first instance that we've seen sort of like a cadaverous mouth loaf, because he's also very gray-looking.
Yeah. Well, I think that he really ignored the advice of his dermatologist in his teen years. I mean, it's unclear whether he's actually an alien or just a guy who did not use his Accutane as prescribed.
He's past the point of proactive.
Mm. Proactive is ain't got shit on what his skin is doing.
Yeah. Yeah, you try to call up Rodan and Fields if you're this guy. They're going to hang up on you. He almost looks like he's got a box turtle around his mouth. Like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's really interesting loaf.
It's a nice new type of loaf.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel like a loaf retread the way some other loaf does.
You know, like the hacky joke about, like, you know, balding guys growing facial hair and the hair just sort of migrating down to the face. Like, This is sort of like his loaf migrated down.
Male pattern loaf.
Yeah.
The experiment is this. They've got this new way of creating a warp field where the ship surfs on a wave of soliton particles, and they haven't, like, built it into a reactor yet, so what they're going to do is create this wave on the surface of a planet, shoot it out, and it's going to pass through a test ship that the Enterprise will then follow to another planet that will send out a scattering field to slow it down. And the idea is that this is a more efficient way to warp around the galaxy, I guess. So they get the experiment started, and they're like, everybody is totally blown away at how great this technology is.
Energy transfer is 98%.
98?
Yeah, everyone's super pumped. No one regards the sound of the wave as being like a cheap toy store ray gun, though. I really did not like the sound this wave made.
Yeah, I mean, they're distracted, man. This wave is getting a lot of horsies to the back wheels. And
yeah, it's true. And the ship is riding on it like Teen Wolf on top of the van.
Yeah, yeah. You can hear the, like, digga 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 ding 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 ding.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's surf rock science, isn't it?
Surf rock science with Edward James Olmos. Can't wait to see that album cover.
It's one of those album covers, like, there was like a Black Crowes album that was like just pubes, and they had to like paper over it because it was too gross. Like, you get Edward James Olmos on an album cover, you got to paper over anything below the nose, right?
Yeah, NSFW.
Yeah.
My love is a peeper, long in jail for that, which longer nurse the disease.
This is about when they go on a field trip to the bio lab, where they get to look at some endangered animals that the Enterprise is, like, moving from one planet to another, which I feel like every time we encounter an endangered species on this show, Adam, it's a hand puppet.
Yeah.
Lulu, Lulu, Lulu.
So Alexander is quite taken with this, but he's not allowed to, like, luxuriate in watching these animals hang around in their cage for very long, because he gets caught stealing models from the bio lab.
I'm sorry. I forgot to tell everyone that the models on the tables were for everyone to play with. So I guess you didn't know you weren't supposed to take them.
This is very upsetting for Worf, and
Worf has to, like, pat him down.
Yeah. It kind of evoked a question for me, which is, like, who gives a shit? There's replicators.
Yeah, like, is stealing less of a thing if you can just reproduce the thing?
I just, yeah, like, I can't figure out how anybody cares at all. Like, those should just be free, and they're, like, the ship could could just, like, with its computer, keep track of what models are available in the biolab, and when one goes missing, like, have one beamed directly into it automatically without anybody even having to pay attention to it.
The act of replication is without honor.
Yeah, that's how a coward gets his toys.
Yeah. It's not even that cool of a toy.
Yeah, it's like kind of a crappy lizard toy.
Yeah.
Not even a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Was Jay Gordon on this field trip?
Oh, I didn't see him if he was.
I feel like there was a little blonde kid that I thought might be Jay Gordon from Disaster.
Was the hand puppet from the Data being put in a museum episode on the table? I thought I recognized it.
It was a different hand puppet.
Yeah.
It was made to look more like a huge log of human feces.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the intention.
Worf has had a couple conversations with Troy, who has sort of declared her intentions not to allow Worf to be a shitty dad. And Worf has kind of brushed it off, like, no, like, you know, the kid was lying, but I talked him out of it. And so now, like, it's pretty clear to Worf that he's got a problem on his hands. And so he's like, he keeps talking to Troy about it, and it's pretty clear that she's, like, also not going to let him, like, learn the ropes of parenting by himself. Like, she is very dismissive of him when he makes, like, rookie mistakes, which I feel like is not really the way I would play this if I was Troy.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that helpful. There's no music box for Worf either that she can just pull out from behind a couch. Some music box playing Klingon opera.
Little negative reinforcement. I mean, this is a more interesting episode for Troy than average, because she's actually, like, doing some counseling. I don't feel like she's entirely in her pot this time.
Yeah, and she brings up some interesting points with him, which is like, you know, Alexander did basically watch his mother get murdered. And then and then basically the same day, you sent him off to live with his grandparents.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty tough day, right?
Yeah, I mean, the upshot of that is she's saying, like, you guys both have some like, grieving and some processing to do, and whether you're going to do it in a Klingon way or a human way or some blend of the two, like, you might consider the fact that because you're both on the same journey, it would be good for you to both do it together.
Yeah, and Worf's like, well, point taken, but I think I'm still going to send him to, like, a Klingon battle academy.
Yeah.
Really toughen him up.
Yeah.
Which is the threat that every parent makes to a disbehaving child. Like, it's boarding school for you.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to be out of here, bub.
What do you think a Klingon boarding school is like? It's got to be incredible.
I'm just picturing, like, Rushmore with a lot more battle damage.
He applied to Praxis and Kronos. Stovacor was a safety.
Worf's having a lot of rubber meets the road, learning while doing kind of interactions around this. Like, he keeps getting it from the teacher that Alexander is not really conforming to the rules. And I found, like, some of the parent-teacher conferences scenes especially upsetting Adam. I don't know if you noticed this, but that toy that's in every pediatrician's waiting room,
yeah,
with the, like, wooden beads and the colored wires,
yeah,
was in that teacher's office.
It's a total hospital toy.
There is something so soul-crushing about the idea of that still being a toy,
yeah,
that is around in the 24th century.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, it's always just kind of sticky.
Yeah. Yeah, you can never get that thing truly clean.
No.
Which is one of the many things that is perplexing about its ubiquity in medical environments.
Yeah, no doubt. Gotta get rid of that thing. I think that thing is spreading disease.
That thing should be on the scrap heap of history by the 24th century, and yet...
am Locute as a boar. You will assist us. I am Locute as a boar. You are boar.
Well, Adam, the experiment with the Celaton wave started great, but it's getting quickly out of control because the ship, the test ship that it was pushing has exploded, and now the wave is getting bigger and faster, and they're worried it's going to have like a Death Star-like effect on the planet that's supposed to slow it down.
Yeah, what do you think of the idea of aiming it at another planet as the experiment?
I feel like they could have aimed it a little bit off axis of the other planet, and that planet would have been just as capable of dispersing the like the field of interference or whatever.
Why not aim it at a star? What's it going to do to a star?
I don't know. You don't want it to have a sting-like effect on a star.
You don't want Shorebreak crashing on your star.
Yeah. You got to observe harbor speed when you're going past a star, because you don't want it splashing like that.
Oh, man, there's something for everyone this episode.
Boat enthusiasts?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, this is becoming not just a crisis for the planet that the wave is headed toward, but the ship, because, you know, the entrepreneur's shields are not doing great, and the only really good option they have for stopping the wave is by getting out ahead of it and shooting it with a bunch of torpedoes. So they put this plan into action where they're going to speed the ship up, go right through the wave, which will test their shields by itself, and then they're going to kind of like lay some hot eggs on it by shooting some torpedoes out of the ship's keister as they go past.
This was a great moment in plot explanation, because as soon as they come up with this plan in the conference room, I'm like, why not go around it? And as I'm yelling this at the TV, they're explaining to me why they can't go around it.
Yeah.
It was perfect timing. They can't go around it because it's grown so big that the time it would take to go around it would be too late. Like,
It has grown so big, and yet when they show it, it doesn't ever look that much bigger.
It's true. Yeah.
Well, they go through it, and they're going to lay these eggs, but they're like, okay, the shields are fucked up enough that this explosion is going to irradiate the belly of the ship, and we need to evacuate those sections. And they're starting to evacuate when they realize there's a big fire in one of the biolabs, and there's this completely insane sequence of them discovering that Alexander is in the biolab with the fire.
Seal off that compartment. Prepare to vent the air.
So there are life forms present in that biolab.
We're transporting endangered animals from Corban 2.
Readings also indicate the presence of a humanoid, Captain.
Computer, identify humanoid life form in Biolab 4.
What humanoid could it possibly be? And they ask the computer about that. The computer spits back the answer, which, like, they probably should have had at the first moment of knowing that there was a fire on the ship. And then, apparently, the only two people on this ship of 1,000 people who can go be the fire patrol are Commander Riker and Lieutenant Worf.
Yeah. This is the point in the episode where they really ask you to take the leap with them.
Yeah. Like, isn't there, like, every deck should have a fucking fire brigade and damage control unit, right?
Yeah.
There should just be, like, I mean, like, if you've ever worked in an office of any size, there's, like, a guy with a fucking day-glow hat and a vest in his cubicle whose job it is to be, like, fire marshal if there's ever, like, a gas leak in the building or whatever. Of course a ship like this would have that guy, right?
It seems like madness, Ben. Now, when you're designing a starship built for transporting about to extinct animals, you're not going to want to install a fire suppression system in that room, because foams, fire suppression liquids, and fire retardants can be poisonous to all sorts of animals.
Make sure you station your damage control crew as far from that section of the ship as possible, in case there's ever a radiation leak due to shooting torpedoes at a Celaton wave.
There's no better word to say in the Boston accent than Celaton.
You're going to want to construct your endangered animal cage out of white plastic and chicken wire.
It's insane. So what Worf and Riker do is basically they recreate the pet shop fire scene from Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Come on. You can help me. Come on. Don't panic. No pushing, no shoving.
Yeah, there's a lot of snakes in that room.
Yeah. Like, right on down to when they open up the door to the room, the flames just shoot out of it.
Yeah, and this is like, there are a bunch of, like, amazing Worf feats of strength, like ripping duranium wall platings off and like, lifting the super heavy beam that has Alexander pinned to the floor.
What, like, you get here is a contest of yells. Like,
yeah.
Like, it really made me think, Ben, who's the better yeller? Is it Worf or Riker? Because you get auditions from both in this scene, and they are both amazing.
Yeah, they like, I feel like they made wagers.
Alexander! Alexander! Can you hear me? Alexander!
Like there was like a bookie on the crew who's like, who's gonna do the better yells in this scene?
If you're directing Frakes, all you need to do is say, give me some real... Slather this one with some anybody. Like, give me the anybody juice on this. And he delivers. It's fucking great.
Yeah, he's getting ready for his role in Star Trek Generations, I feel like.
Yeah.
Well, they, by the seat of their pants, get Alexander out of there, and... Enterprise dissipates the wave, and they even save the endangered species. And, like, the button on the episode is Worf talking to Alexander about, you know, his decision to send him away to military school, and Alexander expressing his continued displeasure with that, and then Worf saying, like, the real challenge would be staying here with me, a terrible father. Are you up for that challenge?
It's like such a veiled threat. It's amazing.
Like, yeah.
Like, he's basically admitting that his adolescence is going to be an atrocity.
Yeah.
There's no way you grow up normal with me. You want to try it?
Oh boy.
That's how you know how bad Klingon boarding school is, when he chooses Worf.
Yeah.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
I don't think I did, Adam. I think
you didn't
like
the episode you attempted to veto? Tell me more.
Well, I regret attempting to veto it because I think there are probably worse episodes this season. And now we are defenseless against them. But I didn't like it for larger reasons than I usually consider in employing my veto. I think it has kind of a racist premise, and I think that it has a lot of problematic depictions of fatherhood and a really like a climactic scene that just strains credulity on all counts. So, you know, it's not a Mount Armus episode, but I don't think it's quite a good episode.
Yeah, much like the episodes where we're asked to believe that the senior staff are a bunch of idiots, like, the inflection point of this episode is the moment where there's a fire in that room and Riker and Worf are the only ones that can go help.
Like, yeah.
They are really needed on the bridge at that moment.
They are, like, two of the three most important people on the bridge at that moment.
Yeah. I mean, we need it for quote-unquote drama, but but is it not more dramatic if Worf has to depend on a stranger to save his son's life?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know, man.
We're deprived of the Riker carrying a bunch of snakes out of the pet store scene, though. And that's fun.
Yeah. That is... Yeah. Anytime Riker and Pee-wee are doing something similar,
Yeah.
I feel like there's something just like deeply true about that.
Riker's a little singed. Worf's loaf is a little singed.
Yeah, there's a little ash in the loaf.
You just slather those parts with some ketchup, I think. Hardly notice.
Mm, yeah. It's a nice Maillard reaction on that loaf.
Yeah.
Adam, I think there may be some Priority One messages awaiting us in our captain's nest. Do you want to check that out with me?
Yeah, you want to hit the answering machine on those? Hit the button?
Let's do it.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
We have a couple of Priority One messages here, Adam. Our first is from Eric, and it's for Dan. And here's the message. Happy to share this pod with you, and thanks for being my best friend. You would never leave me behind like some kind of Klingon Jake. Side note, this form of correspondence is costing us a lot of scarves. If only a cheaper alternative existed. P.S. Hey, Ben, Will Coxon is a stats reference. Nothing to do with crew. Know your viewers. P.P.S. Hi, Nick and Freda. I guess that references a previous Priority One message. And, I don't know anything about statistics.
Boy, that was like a real Russian nesting doll of messages. There's the message... There's the big message, and then there's the sort of slap to the back of your head on the Will Coxon reference. And then there was a shout-out to another P1 submitter.
Yeah.
Kind of a lot going on there.
Yeah, I like that these P1s beget other P1s. That's really nice.
Oh, and then there's also the slap on the cost of the P1. I mean, that's in there, too. So, kind of a lot there.
I mean... He is right, though. It is the most economical way of communicating that either of us would recommend, anyways.
Yeah, there's really no other way to do what they're trying to do.
No.
We have a second Priority One message here, Ben.
Okay.
Let's see if it's a pile of nesting dolls. It's from Kelly. It's for Alan. And it goes like this. Happy birthday to the Captain Picard of my heart. I am proud to say this podcast was another thing I was right about. I love you more than Troy loves chocolate, and that's a heck of a lot.
Dang.
I hope you enjoy this birthday shout out.
Wow, that's a really sweet message.
Kelly, you weren't negative about the cost of the message. You did not criticize... Ben's understanding of some sort of terminology that
obscure math terminology
that he didn't understand. Instead, it was about love, birthday love for Alan. And
yeah,
I think that's especially sweet.
That's great. Sweet as a bowl of chocolate mousse.
Do you think Troy's ever eaten Worf's cake? Because that pound cake appeared to be of the chocolate variety.
Yeah. Well, you know, Troy and Worf wind up hooking up toward the end of the series, so...
We don't talk about the future here, Ben.
That's true. I retract that glimpse into the future.
If chocolate was all it took for Troy to fall for you, she would have hooked up with Wesley, like, in season 2.
Yeah. Makes you wonder where Wesley learned that trick.
Well, thanks a lot to Kelly, and happy birthday to Alan.
Yeah. If you would like to send a birthday message or sell a product or just say something to the larger Greatest Gen community...
Correct either one of us on a misuse of a term.
I would say that that's the only viable way to correct us,
right,
by the way.
Right,
I accept no free corrections. You can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where a... personal message is $100 and the commercial message is $200. Helps us produce this show. Thank you.
Yarmouk, Angelad, and Tanagra.
What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off. I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast. Dharma Kringer.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I did. I got a real laugh out of a line that Troy said in this episode. So she gets my drunk Shimoda for when she tells Worf, I'm not here to approve or disapprove of how you raise your son. Because it seems like that's basically the main thing she's there for in this episode. is like parenting referee.
Yeah, that was pretty backhanded, Troy. She is a real manipulator as a counselor. I can't remember a time when her form of counseling wasn't very manipulative.
Yeah, she's kind of like as much a mentalist as a counselor.
Is this what the Scientologists are on about? Is how fraudulent this is?
I don't know. I've had some very positive experiences with mental health professionals in my past. I have to hope that this is more about Troy being written by people that don't know what the fuck they're talking about than yeah. Troy actually being bad.
Boy, given those two options, I think the likelihood is the former versus the latter.
Yeah. How about yourself? Did you have a Shimoda?
Yeah, I do. And Ben, I think one of my favorite Shimodas to ever call attention to are the types that happen in the deep background, the obscure Shimoda. And when you combine that with an action scene, those are like my all-time favorites. The action Shimoda. In this episode, one of the big bangers gets dropped on the ship, and people go flying. I think this is when they attempt to penetrate the wave, right?
Yeah, there's a couple of bangers at that portion.
And it full-on like throws people out of seats.
Yeah.
And in this scene, Riker's at the top of the horseshoe, sort of at security.
Yeah.
When the banger hits, and he hits the ground and rolls sort of down the slope with his legs up.
Fun.
He falls backwards, and he does that thing where when you roll backwards and kick your legs up and you almost go all the way over and then sort of like roll back and slap your legs down.
Fun.
He almost goes all the way over. And I'm wondering if that was very close to a neck injury for one John Frakes.
Man.
It was real funny. I loved it.
Did you, speaking of Shimoda-like things that Frakes has done, did you see, I think it was on the Facebook, somebody posted a picture of Frakes with like his wife and it was like a pregnancy photo.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He's just the greatest. I think he's living his best life.
Frakes is an example I feel like we can all live by.
There is probably no other place to drop this in, and if I don't, it'll probably never be referenced, but that pound cake scene a couple episodes ago with Worf,
yeah,
when they welcome Wesley back onto the ship, yes. Frakes does some comedy there that I do not completely understand, but just destroys me. He's totally nonverbal, but he is making faces at Michael Dorn and making faces to the camera, and he's sort of in soft focus. And when he passes behind Worf, it looks like he pinches his ass. Like, there's a full 30 seconds of really great physical comedy there that we didn't call attention to during the episode. That I don't know what Frakes is doing on this show besides like entertaining himself. That seems like a real priority for him, and I love it.
Yeah. Well, we don't talk about future episodes, but we sure do talk about past episodes, and that's probably worth revisiting, I don't know, once a week?
Yeah. Good idea. What do we have coming up on the next episode, speaking of the future?
The next episode is Season 5, Episode 11, Hero Worship, a.k.a. Slickback Trilogy, Part 3.
Yes.
A young boy who is the sole survivor of a devastated ship becomes obsessed with simulating Data. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
I remember every frame of this episode. This was maybe the cringiest episode of the series.
Yeah, and it's like
breathtaking.
The most slick back of all of all of the slick back trilogy episodes, right?
It's the slickest back.
This is the kid that you put on the box cover of the Criterion edition, right?
It is. It could be no one else.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's not Jono. I mean, Jono's pretty slicked back, but this kid has slicked the fuck back.
Yeah, Jono takes a look at this kid and is like, whoa, dial it back with a slick back, okay? You're making us look bad. Hey, we're trying to slick back here.
Hey! Are you slick back into me?
There is just a real thick vein of anti-Italian sentiment on Maximum Fun shows lately. I felt like really bad Italian impressions.
Yeah.
Oh, good times. Well, we have to watch it, Ben, because you flailed around and fired off all of your vetoes. You were the guy in the action movie who got hit with gunfire and then shot all of his bullets into the ceiling on his way down to the floor. Yeah.
I peeled off the entire clip in my Uzi as I lay dying.
Yeah. Yeah. Good job by you.
Wow. I don't think we could in good conscience veto a slickback episode anyways, Adam.
No. We're giving the people what they want, which is the triumphant finale of the slickback trilogy.
Well, let's watch it. That's our next episode. Adam, I really appreciate everybody who's gone to maxfunstore.com and copped our hit new Drunk Shimoda's Bar and Grill pint glass, designed by the great Chris Eliopoulos.
Yeah.
Which was just a real treat, right? Like, this guy is like a real heavy hitter illustrator. He does like books that sell like huge volumes, and he like threw this together on Twitter and was like, hey, if you want this, it's yours.
You would think that real talented people wouldn't want anything to do with us.
I shot him a DM on Twitter and I was like, hey, let me send a couple of these glasses your way. And he was like, no, I already ordered one. And I was like, oh, well, I wanted to get you one to say thanks. And he's like, the idea is not for me to get free stuff. It's for you guys to have some money to make the show.
Man, that guy knows what's up.
What a kind guy.
Yeah, that guy's a creator.
Big thanks to Chris, and thanks to everybody that grabbed the glass. And thanks to Adam Ragusea. Big thanks to Adam Ragusea as well this week. Speaking of real people who should probably have distanced themselves from us long ago, and yet, Adam Ragusea blessed us with a new piece of music and helped us big time with our audio F-up on the last couple episodes, and just did it out of the kindness of his heart. That's what you call a mensch.
We are very fortunate to have such good friends, friends of the podcast, and the Goose is definitely one of them. Definitely one of our main squeezes.
Give his shows a listen. He's got he's got the pub on Current, which is about public media. And then he's also got We Didn't Start the Podcast, which is about Billy Joel.
Is it about Billy Joel?
Yeah, it's about Billy Joel.
Oh, yeah. Billy Joel.
Yeah. It's bingeable.
I love it.
Yeah, it's really great. that guy delivers everything he does is great.
Yeah, I was like, there's no way it's going to be better than The Pub, which is a great show. And yeah, it's great, unsurprisingly.
Yeah, fucking cooking with gas over there in Macon, Georgia. We should also thank Dark Materia for our theme song. And with that, we will be back at you next time. Another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and the slickest, backest episode of The Greatest Generation.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.